Hello, everybody. As detailed in a recent Bloomberg article, a Blizzard manager recently departed the company after he refused to give a low evaluation to an employee based on a practice called stack ranking. Okay, so what is stack ranking? This is a practice in which, as per the Bloomberg article, quote, employees are ranked on a bell curve and managers must give low ratings to a certain percentage of staff. So managers were expected to give a poor or developing status to roughly 5% of employees on their team, which would lower their profit sharing bonus money and could hamper them from receiving raises or promotions in the near future. End quote. Even further from this Bloomberg article, quote, Brian Birmingham, who was a co-lead developer of World of Warcraft Classic, wrote an email to staff last week to express his frustration with this system. He wrote that he and other managers on the World of Warcraft team had been able to circumvent or skip filling the quota for the last 2 years. So on with me to discuss and quite possibly debate stack ranking and the situation at Blizzard. We have with us first Matthew Conterman, Director of Research at Roundhill Investments, someone who has spent a lot of time analyzing the performance of many companies, including game companies. Also, Drew Levin, Director of Product at Riot Games, former Director of Product and Lead at Zynga on Words with Friends. And finally, Brett Novak, CEO of Liquid and Grit, the leading free-to-play mobile gaming market research firm and former lead PM at Zynga on Zynga Poker. Welcome, gentlemen.
Excited to be here. Thanks for having us.
Great to be here.
Yeah, awesome to have you guys on. And, you know, there's a lot to unpack, guys. I don't believe it's as simple of a situation as most people are viewing this. But for our audience, maybe we could start with just a level setting in terms of our inherent thoughts, feelings, biases towards stack ranking. What do you guys think about this practice? Maybe starting with you, Matthew.
I think I'm going to speak for everyone and say that before we get into it, we're pretty much probably going to caveat everything we say in this discussion. But I think it's true that if there was a one-size-fits-all approach to this, we would have an answer. Someone would have a piece of software that does this, and we wouldn't be having this discussion in the first place. So, you know, there is a lot of ifs, ands, and buts. It's situational. It depends on the type of organization. In my line of work, financial services, particularly research, where a lot of things have been quantifiable, a lot of your output, a lot of your performance, stack ranking is very effective. And it has been for me, both as an employee and as a manager, to know, you know, where I line up, what I can do better. But that's in my line of work where I've had experience with it. I know other people have had different experiences, and I think we're going to get into the nuances of that today.
Right. And just for the audience, you have worked at a company before that employed stack ranking, and you were okay with it. Is that right?
Yeah. So both as an employee and as a manager doing the ranking, I've been on both sides of it. I've kind of, I've seen how the sausage is made.
All right. And Drew.
So I guess, again, caveating that I'm not an HR professional. I don't design these systems for a living. What I will say is I've worked at now two big companies and gone through annual review processes at both of them, Zynga and Riot, as a manager. Both of them actually have some consistencies that I quite like, which is that they're very standards driven, right? Neither of them uses stack ranking in the way that you've described it. In career conversations, comparison to other employees is heavily discouraged. What is encouraged is understanding how you're doing against a consistent set of standards and measuring yourself and your progress against how well you're delivering on those from a performance level and how well you're growing on a skills basis from a proficiency level. And I think that the best performance systems, which again, I think Zynga and Riot both employ, are ones that encourage people to focus on the factors that they control, their own performance, and does not grade them on the factors that they don't control, i.e. other people's performance.
Okay. And finally, Brett?
I think in certain situations, stack ranking can be useful. I think they're pretty specific to the outcome of what you want. I think good examples would be if you're really rushing to cut costs, for example, stack ranking would be something that would could be valuable in implementing because you're comparing people and you need to cut costs in people specifically. Or in our case, I think the closest example, because we don't really use it often, but in the early stages of onboarding people, so we hire a lot of people. So I can see it being applicable. Whereas, you know, if in other instances, I don't think it's as valuable. But I can see why you would implement it. So I'm kind of like, I guess, situational specific, but I would err on the side of saying I think it's not as valuable when you have time and you're sort of generally grading people.
Okay. Just so you guys know, I ran a poll in the Game Makers newsletter about stack ranking. And based upon the poll results, the question was, what do you think of stack ranking at companies for performance evaluation? So performance evaluation in particular, right? But in this poll, 53% said stack ranking should never be used. So the majority do not want it to be used at all. 29% it can be used situationally. And finally, 18% said stack ranking is fine. So the folks in the stack ranking category are definitely in the minority. And just my own perspective on this is, like, I have not been part of a company, or I have not used stack ranking before. We don't, at my company, we don't generally use stack ranking as a way of performance evaluation. But I guess I would think that for certain applications and for, you know, certain situations, I guess for me, and, you know, when I post about this in our Slack group, I felt like, maybe there are ways in which you actually could use stack ranking in good ways. Like, I think, you know, one of the examples, like, right, you were saying, like, if you have to do a layoff really fast and you've got budgets associated with different groups, would I use stack ranking? Maybe there's a better way. I don't know. But for me, I would feel like maybe that's an okay way of doing that. If you have to, like, do a fast layoff for performance evaluations, I don't do that. But, you know, I was actually trying to think of, are there theoretical conceptual ways in which we could use some form of stack ranking for performance evaluation? I don't have a good answer to that right now, but I do feel like maybe there might be a way in which that's possible. But again, I don't know, you know, not having done it before, I can't speak with conviction that that's something that could be used. But just for the purpose of kind of playing devil's advocate here, and, you know, I think in our Slack group community, most people are against this, but just so I can, I had a few thoughts here that I was thinking about before our call, and so I wanted to talk to you about them. And so the first thought was, well, what about before, and this is for performance evaluation and potentially for, like, you know, hiring, firing people. Let's say you're in a startup instead of at an established company. And the difference in a startup is that you're in a race against the clock, right? You've got a certain amount of cash before your funding dries out. You have to hit product market fit. You have to get to profitability. And so in that case, is someone who's doing a good enough job, right, like meets the expectations, is that good enough? Or if there was somebody else who's dramatically better, in that case, you know, and like optimizing against stack ranking, is that something you should do or not in a startup? And another example I had, just kind of, again, just this is all theory, this is all conceptual, you know, this is all conjecture here, but like I was kind of thinking, what if you required talking about medical care, and let's say you needed brain surgery and there's two hospitals. One hospital supports their employees. If you're a brain surgeon and you can minimally do the job, you're fine. And in hospital B, they aggressively stack rank and only the best brain surgeon is there. Then if you ask me which hospital I would go to, I'd probably choose hospital B. And again, these are, you know, just kind of wild intellectual conjectures, but you know, these are possible ways in which, you know, I was just trying to think of situations where maybe stack ranking could make sense. And then the final example I have is, so I do have kids that go to schools here in California, and there are, I would say, a number of parents in my community are, I mean, they both want to be supportive of California school system and education, but they're also very critical. And one of the issues that was brought up is that in some of these schools, you can't keep, like, great young teachers because of the way that the hierarchical structure of these schools operate. And so there are some teachers who have been in the system for many, many years. They're not interested in learning the newest teaching methodologies or keeping up to date, but they're safe. They can't go anywhere. So some of the best teachers actually are the ones that are let go from these schools. And so if we had a stack ranking system in the public school system, for example, would that potentially lead to better education for our kids or not? So again, just had some of these ideas before kind of jumping on this call and wanted to throw it back to you guys. For those situations for using stack ranking performance evaluations, is there any merit to what I just said, trying to play devil's advocate here?
I think you're making most of these situations up, dude.
I am.
You're right. Absolutely. No, but I think that they don't practically exist in the real world.
Okay.
So with the brain surgeon one as a sort of the easiest one to pick on, right? Like, one, surgery is a super competitive field already.
Okay.
Two, if this hospital, this hypothetical hospital that only keeps the very best ones, like, churns through a lot of them, presumably they have, like, lower capacity to actually perform surgeries. And so economically, probably what would happen is that, like, procedures are more expensive or wait times are longer. And so it's harder for you as a patient to get a surgery done there because they only keep the best surgeon out of all of the possible surgeons that they could have. So probably you don't actually have, like, that much choice, or it's massively expensive for both. And also, like, if you change the details slightly, you run into one of the issues that I have with it, which is that, let's say instead of a surgeon, it's a dentist, and they aren't stack ranked based on patient outcomes. They're stack ranked based on something that dentists are actually in some practices stack ranked on, which is amount of procedures that they manage to generate. A real thing that actually happens in the United States of America is some dentists will just direct patients toward procedures that they do not need. They'll pull teeth that are otherwise healthy. They'll do crowns and root canals that patients don't need. And this generates money for the business and makes them look good in a practice, but is fundamentally contradictory to patient outcomes. I would not want to go to that practice, despite them using stack ranking. So I think that the root issue is stack ranking serving me as the end consumer by creating a business that is fundamentally more oriented toward my needs?
Right. So if
there's two different two different debates there, though. Mm-hmm. There's the debate over theoretically a stack ranking good, and then in practice, are we optimizing the ranking system to the appropriate metrics, right? In that case, your argument is, well, if we optimize to what's best for the business, in that case, it's see as many patients as you can and charge them as much as you can, pull as many teeth, put as many crowns, etc. But if you're just optimizing to patient surveys, and then we get into a whole nother thing of surveys are bad, and the survey you posted, I'd love to see the survey results broken down between managers and non-managers. I think you'd have a different, I think it would look different personally, because when you're a manager and you have to make these decisions, especially with so many companies doing layoffs right now, you sit back and you look and it's like, I like all these people. I have to get rid of someone. How do I do it? It'd be great if there was a quantitative system to help me, because that way I don't have to feel like I'm just being a bad person.
The guilt of making the decision of wielding the sword.
Yeah. And it's kind of funny how some companies are making these decisions. And in some cases, there's no clarity. Like, for example, there were some TikToks of people from Google who suggested that from the latest layoff, it was not performance-based. And so they were kind of angry that there was no notion of performance, or there was no notion of anything that they felt was like a standard. They were just let go almost randomly, or at least that was the messaging to them.
Because you're just aligned in a spreadsheet when the CFO of an organization with 200,000 people is looking at it, right? And so they don't see the individual. They just see a cost. And it's everyone needs to cut a little bit so we get to the number we want to get to. But the extreme other side of the coin is everyone from the GE school of thought, right? I mean, there's been this Jack Welch GE mentality that goes around corporate, and everyone that's a CFO that's come from that lineage tree, Cisco is a great example. Every August, the end of Cisco's fiscal year, they announce 1,000 job cuts, plus or minus. They just let go of the bottom X percent every year like clockwork.
Right.
I don't know if it's good or bad, but it's predictable.
Right. Brett, do you have any thoughts in terms of my kind of like thought experiment ideas, or just
general? Well, it's interesting because when I joined this call, I was pretty against it. But now that I'm thinking about it, I can see the applications of it. So I'm kind of getting convinced the other way, because I forget who brought up the point, but it is interesting that it does in a way make it clear to the employee how they're getting graded, right? I mean, whereas like the Twitter example, people are getting laid off and it's pretty arbitrary. So I understand why people are against it, but I was thinking while you were saying that, it would kind of be nice when you're in the company to be like, okay, well, these are the five things we grade you on, and this is how you can move up or down in the ranking system, right? So there's like kind of a clarity to that, as opposed to you're just bumping along in a company and then one day you go in the office and they're like, you're laid off, right? And they were sort of based on all these arbitrary things. And so, yeah, I mean, it's funny, like I'm thinking of all these reasons why I would. I would do it for an emergency situation. I'm always about being able, I mean, a big component of my company is the ability to change to recent conditions or things in the market, and having people stack ranked and ready to make those difficult decisions quickly would be another reason why you might want to do it. And then again, I already brought this up, but we do use it, and I think it's a great example of it, is in the hiring process. We basically, I mean, you know, anyone who's listened to any of my podcasts know we hire blind and we standardize the testing process and we don't look at resumes. And it's kind of a perfect example of we're trying to rank people based on their output only. And it's actually very easy to stack rank people. Like I always tell people about the process, like the number one person is exponentially better than the second person. So it's not like, oh, who are we going to pick? Like the number one person goes way beyond everyone else. The second person is really strong too. We generally hire, and then we'll hire the first three. But man, that first one is so good. And we actually try to make it so that we're comparing apples to apples. And that's where stack ranking kind of is nice, is it forces you to go, okay, well, let's make sure we're ranking Matt and Drew and Joseph like on the exact same things, as opposed to like, you know, I really like Joseph, which is obviously not a great way to let people go and all that stuff. So yeah, I can see more and more applications of it. Caveat, asterisk, all that good stuff.
I wanted to underscore one point that Brett made that I thought's really important, and I think goes a long way to explaining. I mean, I'm not intimately familiar with what happened at Blizzard. I read the same news stories as everyone else, the same tweet threads, but if the system is understood by the employees when they sign up to work there, and as they're an employee, they know what they're getting graded on, they know what goes into those systems, they know how the sausage works, I think it can be very effective, because throughout the year, you know what you should be tracking towards. And if you're slipping, you should be worried about your job because you know what's coming, right? But if it's nothing happens, and all of a sudden, hey, stack rank, fire the bottom 10%, that's the worst scenario because you don't have that rapport built amongst the employee base. So I think that's a really important point that Brett made.
Yeah, and maybe I could argue against myself here, but kind of to Drew's point, like I do think like if you had good enough standards, like you knew exactly what you needed to be successful, then to some degree, you know, even if you stack ranked or didn't stack rank, if you're a startup or not, maybe you could be successful. But I don't know, Drew, do you have any other thoughts to that you had about this?
Yeah, so I think, and this may be very game specific, Matt, I don't know sort of the exact nature of the skill set required for your work, but like in games, right, in analytics, in research, in product management, all of those are like fairly, I guess, broad skill set requiring jobs, right? And it is reasonable to expect that over a large enough org, you have people who are very hard to compare despite having similar job titles, either because the responsibilities are quite different or because they're just like, to use the parlance of management and organizational designers, right? Like they're shaped differently, right? Like I can have like a more quantitative PM or a more like game designy PM, and they might have the same title, but their skill sets are different. Their experiences are different. The projects that I could give them that they'll be better or worse at will be different. And so yes, I can say like, oh, you get like a 4 in this box and a 2 in this box. And so like that averages out to 3 or whatever. But like, that's not really like a one-to-one comparison. It's this person solves needs A, B, and C better. This person solves needs N, P, Q, and R better. Which one's better? They're just different. And importantly, setting up the right incentives to have those two PMs help each other so that one of them benefits from the other's expertise and experience is, I think, a really important factor in how companies become more successful, especially in training up more junior talent, right? Like if you work in an organization where it's known that stack ranking exists and 10% of every team has got to go at the end of the year, or 10% of the entire organization has got to go at the end of the year every year, why would you help the person on your team that's struggling? Like, the lion is coming. Why wouldn't you just leave them and like thank your lucky stars that there's someone on your team who's definitely going to get cut, and thank God it's not you, right? Like, it's a really sick thing to think, but like, that is the sort of thinking that stack ranking, I think, encourages, yeah, as opposed to being like, we're all on the same team, we're in this together, I'm going to help you, and later maybe you can help me.
Super important point, Drew, that stack ranking could lead to perverse incentives. So that, I think that's a really important point. Brett, you want to go ahead?
Yeah. Well, I want to clarify, though, that Drew, you threw something into what we're talking about, right? Because we were talking about stack ranking. And then what you threw in was letting go the bottom 5%, right? And those are two different things. And I think stack ranking gets associated with letting people, the bottom 5%, go out, which I don't think that makes a lot of sense. Just cutting the bottom 5%. I don't know. It doesn't seem very strategic, and it seems kind of overly simplistic. But the stack ranking side, like, there does seem to be some value of that, right? Like, for your example, for instance, you were saying, well, there's a, you know, a PM that's like this, and it's a pin like that. Well, a good sort of counter to that for stack ranking would be like, well, make two different PM positions then, right? Like, make the soft skill PM and the hard skill PM, so that you can kind of, to your point, you can scale getting good soft PMs and hard PMs, or whatever you want to call it. And you can improve that, you can train it, and you can do a lot of things around it. When you have, and I find this in my business, is like, when ambiguity, it really leads to a lot of angst internally. And we have a very unique culture, but one reason why it works is because it's very clearly stated. This is how we're going to do it. And if you're okay with that, great. This is a company for you. If you're not, you know, go find another company. And that's the message from day one. And I think, you know, a good example of that is like salary, right? It's like, you're going to make $100,000. And it's the ambiguity around it is that 40 hours a week? Is that 50? Is that 60? Is that 70? Is that 100? Right. And that's a good example of where these companies, like it's sort of ambiguous. What is really the arrangement here? And then later, and I don't know why I went to that, but like, I just think that those things like you're talking about, like you want to try to remove those in a business. Well, you know,
Matthew, you have worked in a company where they implemented stack ranking and you were a manager overseeing stack ranking. But I know the concern Drew raised seems like it might, like, you know, like, let's say even if it's not just getting rid of the 5%, but if you want to be the top dog, you know that you're going to be ranked against other people. I mean, would you be like, okay, I could help Mark, but actually fuck him, because I want to be number one in our team.
It all comes back to how you structure the rankings and if you incentivize people to collaborate and work together. And if you have ways to measure that, which is not always easy to do, but there are ways to do it depending on the organization, then I don't think it has that perverse outcome. I will say, to Drew's point about, you know, just ignoring that person, there was times where, you know, I was managing maybe a team of 5 or 6 people. 80% of the time is spent on the bottom one person who's struggling the most. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to handhold them and manage them day to day. And then you only dedicate 20% of the management time to the other people that are doing really well and who you should be coaching and training and bringing up. And so on the flip side of that argument is the fact that when things are bad, you actually end up spending a lot of your time and focus on the bad. And so potentially, you know, there is another. So we're going to talk in circles and there's all these different perverse outcomes and all, but everything is derivative of itself. And none of this happens in isolation and in a bubble. And that's why, again, there's no right answer. I did want to come back to your point though, JK, about a startup, because, you know, having left a big organization and working in startups, you see a lot of people wear a lot of different hats and they'll do a lot of different jobs. And I don't think stack ranking works in that type of organization, because when everyone's running around and just, hey, we got to do this, we got to meet this deadline, we got to get this product out, we got to do this, and people are just throwing away titles and just doing whatever has to get done, I don't see how you can measure that. Like, you can't measure my performance as a research analyst when I'm doing so many other things that basically look like a COO role sometimes. So I think there are definitely types of organizations, particularly early stage ones, where stack ranking just does not work.
Yeah, let me give you like, and maybe to also raise an additional point here, just one thing that happened in my company recently, and it's not really stack ranking, but it's a form of stack ranking, where we were running a recruitment process for a role. We hired somebody, and literally later that day, a new candidate came in, and we wound up, you know, interviewing this person. It's like, actually, we just made an offer, and this one person accepted it, but Sally's actually probably twice as good. What do we do now? And so now there's like this cruelty versus character question mark, right? Do we be cruel and say, sorry, Bill, we're going to rescind your offer and make an offer to Sally? Or do we, you know, what do we do there? What we wound up doing is not doing that and just honoring our initial offer and just saying, you know, hey, Sally, we think you're dope. Hopefully another position opens up, but we already made an offer out. But yeah, I do think that maybe we could talk about the moral dilemma. Like, let's say you could find somebody who's dramatically better. What would you guys do? Would you guys, you know, as a manager or thinking about the type of company, or maybe if you're in a startup versus another kind of company, would you make that decision to hire Sally versus, you know, versus Bill? Or what would you guys do? Any thoughts from you guys?
I just think about it this way. The reputation of the company matters a lot when you're trying to hire talent, particularly when it's niche talent. And if you were to go down the road of rescinding that offer to hire someone else, that's going to be on Glassdoor, whatever the local equivalent of Glassdoor is the next day. And that's going to hurt your chances of hiring people down the road. And so, you know, yes, if this is the only role you're ever going to hire for, then it's probably important to do that. But if you're trying to build a long-lasting company and build a team over decades, you're going to hurt yourself a lot more than help yourself, I think, in that scenario.
Okay. Any other thoughts from Drew or Brett or even thoughts about 5%?
Yeah, I mean, we basically stack rank applicants. I mean, we 100% do. I mean, they fill out a Google form and their name goes into a Google spreadsheet and they are stack ranked.
Well, you're talking about recruiting though, right? I mean, I think in recruiting, everybody's stack ranked.
I mean, hiring.
Yeah, in hiring.
Yeah, I mean, that's like, I mean, it's a perfect example of like the application of stack ranking and why it can be valuable. And so we definitely do that. I think to your point, JK, I think what's really hard for employees to understand is that a business is a completely emotionless, objective entity. And when you apply emotions and morality and things like that to a business, you know, you can have issues, right? And I've really struggled with that being a CEO. And that's one of the reasons why I don't actually get to know a lot of people in my company, is because to run an effective company, I've found you have to be very objective as a leader. And that's extremely hard when you are an emotional creature, right? When you have feelings about other people, you care about other people, all that. At the same time, you have to like look at it from this sort of very objective standpoint. It was very difficult for me to develop that. And I basically used ways to get around it. And in this example, like, people don't want to think that a business is basically stack ranking them, or they're an entity in a business that creates some type of value. And if they don't make that value, the business is going to get rid of them. Like, they don't like to hear those things. But the reality is, those things, you know, that's how businesses work. The other thing I would add though to that, to Matthew, to your point, is like, we hire very
you know, very uniquely. And people have made comments on Reddit and stuff about our business. And Reddit, I mean, a good reason why I think you shouldn't have rules, you should have guidelines. Reddit doesn't allow you to comment on things if it's your own business. So there's no way of us actually responding, because they're like, it's a fake company and they're using us and all this stuff. And like, they don't allow us to actually say that we're a real company. Like, no one in the company can say that we're a real company. So there's no way of us, other than like other websites, saying that we're a real company. And it's kind of this funny thing of like, you know, a good example of why you shouldn't have these like hard set rules. But yeah, it has sort of like tarnished our, I guess, our like reputation for our applicants. I wouldn't have changed it, because we still get, yeah, I don't know, but it's something to consider. We have done some things to like get around that. Like, there's more information on the application page. There's like a video of people talking about the business or unique ways of how we hire and all this stuff, and trying to explain ourselves. And we've started to like do a bunch of different things to kind of, but there'll always be people out there that are going to go online and say that, you know. And it's okay, last thing, it's hilarious, because it's actually because people don't want to admit that they're not as great as they really are, right? Because these people like actually are just like, there's no possible way that I couldn't have got this job. I'm amazing at it. And what we end up actually doing is sending them the winner's application. And then like they sort of like compare themselves. Even then they have a very hard time like swallowing the fact that they aren't as great as they think they are. I mean, I'm sure they're very great, but just not for this role, right? I mean, it's just not, it's a unique place. So,
Drew, what about you? What are your thoughts in terms of like, you know, sort of character versus cruelty, and maybe even the whole notion of dropping 5% or some, you know, lowest, what is deemed as lowest performance or lowest on the stack at certain companies like GE or other companies like that.
Yeah. I mean, so taking the question in reverse, I'm not like a super American corporate history buff, but wasn't that era of GE like kind of panned as, you know, like Jack Welch not doing so great on that front? And To use a different example, didn't Microsoft stagnate for a while by employing the same practices? Like, I'm not saying that like there's necessarily causation there, but that is my takeaway from like reading a bunch of Wikipedia articles in my spare time.
I actually don't like the strategy of just every year we're going to get rid of so many people. Especially, yeah, there was a ton of companies.
Yeah, there's two different things. Like, let's make sure we're talking about two different things. When I say stack ranking is good, right, does not mean
I'm responding specifically to 5%
people is bad, right? Yeah. So like, we kind of need to disassociate those two things. Yeah. Otherwise, everything that I say is going to get associated with laying people off, and everything Drew said, you know,
two different things.
Like,
but let's also come back to
stack ranking. There's applications of it. Yeah. Laying the bottom 5% off, I completely disagree with that. That's like, it just seems so rudimentary.
But let's also come back to it. When you're talking about large public companies with tens of thousands, over 100,000 employees, the CEO doesn't know every employee. They're aligned in a spreadsheet. The CEO probably spends half their day looking at the stock price. But when the stock market rewards companies to lay people off, they're going to be aggressive about it. And when the stock market rewards them to have fixed rules about, we're going to lay off this many people every year to stay efficient, they will do it.
Yeah.
They will do what the stock market rewards them for. In 2020 and 2021, they got rewarded to hire as many people as possible and chase as many moonshots as possible. In 2022 and 2023, they get rewarded to cut people off, to lay people off, excuse me, and cut costs. And you even heard Zuckerberg, this is the year of efficiency for Meta. And so
last year was the year of 5-year investments in Meta. Too bad that the year of efficiency has to come year two of the investment period.
Yeah.
If only they had a coherent strategy that wasn't driven by the stock price.
And I think we should get into that.
Yeah, that's just like poor management 101. I mean, come on, like public management by stock market like numbers, it's got to be.
It's poor, but you'd be surprised how much it affects CEO decisions in large public companies.
No, I wouldn't be surprised at all. Well, having been at a public company,
one reason why a public company would implement a rule like that is because the CEO probably knows that they don't, at a certain scale, you don't have all great people and you don't have great managers across the board. So the CEO may be thinking, oh, what's a crude blunt instrument I can get to like try to keep the performance of employees high? And I'm not saying that's right. I'm saying that's all you're thinking.
There's a second half of that assumption that isn't stated, but is really, really important.
Okay.
Which is, let's say that your company needs 100 employees to keep the numbers smaller. It could be 100,000, I don't care. And you're like, we're going to cut 5 or 10% every year. If there's like some steady state, like employment level for your company, and it's like 100,000, right? You're hiring those people back, or not those people, because you let them go. And so now it's not just a bet on like, is letting those people go good? It's, can we get better employees from the hiring pool than what we let go? And keep in mind that like all of the people we let go are like at least somewhat experienced with our company. Hiring takes time, onboarding takes time, integrating people into teams takes time. All of those are enormous costs spread out over many, many teams. I don't think that you can look at it in isolation of, are we getting better employees? Because the churn of, oh, we don't have this person for a project because they were in the bottom 10% last year, so now we need to like put this project on hold. Like there are meaningful like elements of lost productivity and like culture thrash, all of that stuff.
Right.
That so, I think create costs that you are harder to measure.
So just to present the management thinking around this, I'm not saying everybody, but how some people may justify it is that there is a philosophical view, whether you believe it or not, and you know, we could debate this as well, that the older a company gets, the more time goes on, and especially in growth companies, what happens is a phenomenon called management stacking, basically where, you know, you get more people into a company. They want to advance in their career, so they want to become a manager. So they become a manager, then that manager becomes a manager of managers, and you just get manager. So you have like the stack of like 100 managers over time. So like,
can you insert the clip from the movie Office Space where he's like, when I make a mistake, I have 7 bosses, so I hear about it 7 times. That's exactly what you're talking about. Like,
okay. Well, that,
And Zuckerberg was even like, part of what they're doing is what he called flattening, which again,
right.
He's not my favorite person.
Right.
But that's what they're doing.
So there is this view that this management stacking starts accumulating over time. So again, I don't want to speak for anybody. I don't want to speak for, you know, and by the way, and to your point, Drew, Microsoft did implement stack ranking and then they got rid of it because they didn't think it was effective. I believe Amazon still does it. So it's like, okay, who's right? I mean, both companies are doing well, right? But I do think like maybe the philosophy behind stack ranking where you could potentially justify this. And again, I'm speaking all out of speculation and theory here, but you know, just to get the conversation going on what some of the rationale might be, I think that might be some of the rationale behind some of these management leaders about why would we, you know, get rid of the supposed bottom 5%, for example.
And the other thing we're not talking about is also what's written into their employment contracts and what their stock comp is driven by. A lot of executives get bonus options for various things every time they get a new employment contract with their company. I guarantee you that a lot of the new ones coming out in the next few years will be about profitability, will be about minimizing headcount growth, will be about some sort of margin detail. And so this is all going to be, you know, a self-fulfilling prophecy because they're going to be incentivized to their bottom line, to their pocket, to meet these goals are going to be put in their contracts. Just like, you know, Bobby Kotick, it didn't come to fruition, but he would have gotten a huge payday if he would have done a strategic acquisition that increased the stock price by a certain amount. It was in his employment contract after King. So there are lots of things that go into these contracts that cause perverse incentives, whether you agree with them or not. And they're really important to think about when you're thinking about all this.
Okay. And, you know, I want to talk about potential applications for stack ranking. But before I go there, I want to also hit this other point, which was like a point of kind of discussion and debate, which was really around this guy. I think his name was Brian Birmingham. He was the manager at Blizzard. So he kind of sent an email to a bunch of people in the company openly criticizing the policy. And as I noted in the introduction, He not only openly suggested he will not support it, but he said he kind of circumvented it for 2 years. And in the email, he wrote, quote, "If this policy cannot be reversed, then the Blizzard Entertainment I want to work for doesn't exist anymore, and I'll have to find somewhere else to work," end quote. And so after that email, Brian was called in by HR at Blizzard. They confirmed his intentions, and then they terminated him. So the question I have for you guys, should he have been terminated? What would you guys, from a company perspective, aside from the, you know, stack ranking type of issue, what do you think the Blizzard response to his open letter and not supporting that policy is?
I think getting into the specifics here is a trap because, like, none of us know the guy and, like, none of us know the details. If you zoom out to enough of a layer of abstraction, I think that there might be, like, sort of a no-duh conversation. Maybe it's not as no-duh as I think, where it's just like an employee emails HR and says that they disagree with the company policy and that they plan on not cooperating with it. What do you do? And it's just like, well, I'm not an HR professional, but probably you email them back and you say something like, hey, were you being serious right there? And if they're like, yes, I'm being deadly serious. And if you don't let me, like, contradict your policy, and by the way, I'm a manager, then I don't know, fire me, I guess. Then, like, as the HR org, what exactly are your options again? Like, are you going to be like, our policies are kind of up for debate anyway. And, like, you can do what you want. Just don't tell too many people that we're giving you the hall pass. Like, what is your play here?
I think I would agree with you, Drew, where if the email was just to HR saying, I disagree with these HR policies, can we talk about it? I think that's totally acceptable, right? But I think what happened here is he sent an open letter to a bunch of people saying, this policy sucks. I will not support this policy. And I think that's where he got in trouble.
Here's a really extreme example. Mm-hmm. Let's just say that I thought that robbery was good and I disagreed that robbery should not be illegal. So I just start stealing stuff from people's houses. And then the police confront me and it's like, well, I don't think robbery should be illegal. It's my personal view. Like, no, I would go to jail. Like, that's a very extreme example.
Sure.
But to your point, JK, you can disagree with a policy and have a conversation about the policy. But as a manager, you have a responsibility to uphold the policies, even if you don't necessarily agree with them, while working to shape the policies the best way you think to support the employees on your team. And that's the way that I think about it. So I think that if the reporting on this instance is correct, that this is the series of events that occurred, he was in the wrong, and the actions taken by the organization seem appropriate. But again, this is all based on what's publicly available. I'm sure there's way more information behind the scenes that we don't have.
Brett, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of agree. I kind of agree. I mean, I encourage anyone to speak their mind, obviously. And, I would say it's great to have people in an organization do that and question anything they want and be able to, so you don't want to do anything that would stop that from happening, right? But when someone threatens to leave, which is a weird thing to do anyways, because isn't really any day of your experience at a company a day where if they're not doing what you believe, you're going to leave, right? Like, openly stating that is a threat, which is a aggressive way to approach a problem. And a very bad negotiation tactic, Drew, because we've talked about negotiations, because it puts you in a corner where you basically, if they call your bluff, you're kind of in trouble. And so in that way, I think it was a very bad approach to doing something. And again, I don't know the specifics of it, but it sounds like HR was sort of had to sort of say, like, if you're not going to buy into the system that we're designing as a company, like, we have to let you go, because ultimately, again, it's this weird thing, like, the company has to be put first before really any individual employee. And that's really a hard thing to swallow when you're an employee, but that's kind of the reality of business and really any organization, right?
I mean, the extreme case of this is Ray Dalio and Bridgewater and his principals. I mean, one of them is they have an insanely flat structure. I know people that have worked there, and they do just, not argue is the wrong word, but they have open debates about policies and direction of things. And it's a very flat structure and they get heated, but people do it in a respectful manner. And the company should be built in such a way that people should feel like they're empowered to speak up when they think they have good ideas. But that doesn't mean you should also be breaking the rules at the same time.
Yeah, it kind of feels like from my perspective that whether Brian was right or wrong, and I do believe he's wrong, because I think that a company that sets a set of standards, you should follow even if you disagree, so long as, you know, an agreement has been made that this is what we're doing. And so whether you agree with it or not, I would, you know, I think you need to support. It's kind of like the Amazon policy of disagree and commit. But I also believe that this is a very emotionally charged topic. And, you know, just talking in Slack, I kind of got that sense as well. So there's something underneath the hood about stack ranking and this kind of practice that I do think is going to be very sensitive. And so I also feel like, you know, for someone who's not a great manager communicator, like let's say me, and I would say like I have problems communicating things with the right level of nuance and in a very refined way. But I think if you're talking about an issue like stack ranking, where right or wrong, I think that it has to be like not only messaged and communicated, and it has to be rolled out in a way where it's explained and at least people understand the motivation why. So I would almost feel like, sure, Brian didn't follow the policy, but maybe Blizzard didn't roll this thing out in the proper way where they're like, okay, let's bring all the managers in. Hey guys, look, we have an issue here. We have to do a layoff. It has to be quick. We're using stack ranking for these reasons. Let the managers feel like they're heard. It seems like, why would Brian send this open letter out to everybody? To me, it feels like he doesn't feel like he has been heard by management. And he's trying to say, hey guys, look, I think this is a really important issue that you guys aren't addressing. I want everybody to know about it. So again, I also agree that he shouldn't have been let go, but I feel like, yeah, there's probably more to it. Drew, you have any other follow-up points besides that?
Yeah. Skating right by the individual discussion, I think that to sort of make one, I guess, contextual argument for stack ranking, since I've been arguing against it for the last 45 minutes, I think that it is a very good tool if your management layer is not particularly good at dealing with nuance, right? And this is actually like the corollary to Brett's point, right? Which is, Brett, to restate your point as well as I heard it, you want to eliminate as much like ambiguity and nuance and subjectivity in these sorts of spaces as you can, because it leads to better outcomes. Fair?
Why don't you, I don't know if I would 100% agree with that statement. No, but in the hiring process, I try to remove biases, right? Sure. That doesn't mean I'm trying to remove any, like anything that's but I'm trying to remove any bias. If there's, we generally don't like try to stick to like rules and stats and all this. Like you can make it like ambiguous decisions. That's part of business. That's part of life. Like that's sure. What humans do best. And actually what I want people on my team to do is make like very difficult decisions quickly. But when it comes to human things, we just really try to remove like, hey, I really like Drew, or right. I have a feeling this person is going to be great for the company.
Yeah. A lot of subjectivity.
Those things. Yeah. 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 Yes. With hiring.
Sure.
But I'm just like caveating. Yeah. Yep,
totally fair.
Yeah.
So I think if your managers are ill-equipped to deal with like too many dimensions in the space in which they have to make decisions, stack ranking is like a nice little paint by numbers coloring book, right? Because it's just like, instead of all of these decisions, you just have to make six decisions, right? You have five people on your team, and the only decisions that you need to make are who's in first, who's in second, who's in third, who's in fourth, who's in fifth. That's it, right? That is the entire like decision.
No, space. I mean, I'm speaking for specific examples of a former employee. That's not how it worked. I mean, there's a whole bunch of metrics that go into it, and I had a team of six, and there was 10, you know, five, six other managers, whatever. They had teams of five or six. We all do our own team, and then we sit down and we have to debate and we have to defend.
Yeah, yeah.
why we have literally a stacking meeting, why this person deserves to be above that person. And so it's not just in your little bubble. You still have to get up and go to bat for people when you have to. And so I don't think it's as simple as that. But there is some sort of a social contract that goes into these organizations. And again, not familiar intimately with the situation at Blizzard, but it sounds like they went from doing stack ranking without layoffs to abruptly saying, we're going to do layoffs based on stack ranking. That is somewhat of a breach of the social contract of the work of the workplace, right? Because you're taking something and using it for something that it wasn't meant to be used for, it wasn't previously used for. And the messaging around that and how you're changing that social contract of the workplace doesn't seem to have been done well enough. Wasn't consulted. You weren't, you know, the managers weren't talked about what's the best way to do this. And so I know decisions have to be made quickly, especially when, you know, the executives just say, hey, do this. But those are all factors that go in as well.
All right. Maybe we can now talk about, is there any scenario or like, let's talk about stack ranking for performance. I think at least Brett, Matthew, and actually I believe that for layoffs, and if you're doing it quickly and crudely, you know, that may be like a crude way of doing stuff for layoffs, but for performance evaluation, can any of you make a case? Like, I think the case against it, to your point, Drew, is potential perverse incentives. Why not just have a specific standard, unless you're laying people off, or is stack ranking okay for, you know, to determine bonuses and things of that nature? And I have been personally, I've been against it, but I thought of a potential kind of like variation of stack ranking, which I'll talk to you guys about. But before I get there, I want to get your thoughts in terms of, is there any scenario in which stack ranking could be applied to performance evaluation? Maybe actually starting with you, Drew, because it sounds like you wouldn't use it at all for performance evaluation, right? And the vast majority of our, well, not the vast majority, but the majority of our audience says never use it.
Yeah. So I think that it is fundamentally unfair to characterize someone's performance strictly in relationship to their peers, right? You can say, we as a company have these standards and you are meeting, not meeting, exceeding, whatever, those standards. I think if your performance as an employee is contingent on whether or not your team is better or worse, then your company has not done enough work to understand your individual value. With that said, budgeting is fundamentally a stack ranking exercise, right? Like every company has a bonus pool, right? There's a budget every year for how bonuses get handed out or how raises get handed out, right? No company has infinite money. That is a featuring budget bug of the corporate world that we live in. And so like on some level, you have to be like, all right, we've allocated 110% of our budget. And now we need to figure out like, whose raise amounts and bonus allocations have to get trimmed so that we hit 100% of our bonus allocation. You can't just be like, oh, never mind, screw you accounting. Our bonus allocation is going to be 10% more. It doesn't work. I haven't tried it yet, but I'm pretty confident it would work. Go on.
I was going to say, there's the flip side of that too. And I've been part of this. And this is the hardest conversation I've ever had to have as a manager. There's some corporate-wide goals that don't get hit. So the raises that year for the entire corporation are within certain bands. Mm-hmm. But someone on your team performed extremely well.
Right.
So you have to sit down in February at their year-end review and tell them, you were the best performing person in the department. Here's 4%. Like, that's the hardest conversation you have to have with anyone. And you say, but everyone else got no raise. You got a raise, which is more than everyone else. But 4% and I worked my ass off. Like, that's the hardest conversation I've ever had as a manager.
I've had harder conversations letting people go, but okay.
Yeah. Well, that's again why rules, I think, in companies are bad, right? Because clearly this person should have deserved something higher, right? And to counter this, and this is so interesting that I'm getting flipped, like, doesn't every business stack rank every single employee based on how much they make every year, right? I mean, like, isn't that a stack ranking number? The CEO makes the most money. The CFO makes the second most money.
Not in my company.
The COO makes the third most money. whatever the case may be, potential value, right? You, I mean, I don't think your EV is lower than anybody in your company, right? So, right?
Depends on where Tesla is.
Well, I mean, theoretically, I hope that's the case. But like, that's what I'm saying is like, that sort of stack rank everyone. And I guess what I'm coming to is like, I don't think that I would use it. It doesn't make sense for me to use it in a lot of the instances that people are using it in, but it just seems like businesses do it. And I'm going to just say, like, as I get older, I'm sort of more and more believing that like these like what I call sort of like shit sandwich situations never go great, you know, and I'm with you, JK, like the amount of times someone said like, well, if you had approached this differently and if you had said, and if you had, your tone was different, and if you hadn't looked with your, you know, it's just like, then it would have all gone perfectly. It's like, no, this is a shit sandwich conversation, right? I'm letting people go. They're not a good employee. They're doing a poor job. You know, whatever it is, this conversation is not going great, right? Like, there's no squeezing it between the Oreo bullshit stuff that's going to come out of my mouth that person is going to walk out the door and go, you know what? I love that Brett guy. He's great. You know,
it's like, very easy it's to not. Be a Monday morning
it's
quarterback.
Just not.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Yeah. And particularly when, you know, I mean, I won't go, yeah. You know, well, particularly all the biases that go into like all that stuff, but it's just like, come on. You know, like at this instance, they're coming down. Do you think that HR really wanted to email everyone and go, yo, can you guys stack rank your employees? Like, you think they were like fired up? Like, they came in, like, can't wait to email the company and go, hey, guys, can you stack rank people today as opposed to just doing your normal job? You know what I mean? No, the HR was like, this is going to stink. You know, this is sucks. Like, let's spend a week drafting this email so it sounds flowery and people like buy into it, right? You know,
well,
and
I'm
then that
sure,
guy's
I'm,
like,
I'm not sure if they did that. But
seriously, like, right. Who didn't think that was gonna, who thought that was gonna be the best email they sent,
sure.
Right? Like,
yeah, and
it's not as fun as like, hey, happy hour on Friday, right? That's an easy one.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, stack rank your team,
right?
You know,
so Brett, I think you're right. Like, one of the things that I think as managers and leaders of companies we have to understand is that just people are not perfect, you know. And I just, even looking at myself, and like Brett, you're saying, like, you know, there are times when maybe you lack nuance. I certainly do at times. I think most people are human. They blow up at people sometimes, and like a lot of mistakes are made. So yeah, sometimes some of these tools are because we do have limitations, right? Just like we're not perfect. And then you gotta, like, in bigger organizations, you have to find the system that not only works, works across your entire management layer, right? So I would
flip that, JK, and say most of the time, almost like 99% of the time, right? Like, in my experience in a business, 95% of the time, I did not have the nuance ability to communicate my thoughts perfectly to the next person who received it exactly how I wanted it. I mean, I would put it up there.
Okay.
Right. It's one of the reasons why I started my own company. Right. Cause it was just like, come home so many times and be like, hey, I was trying to tell this person A and they heard elephant, you know, it's like, I don't even know what happened. Right. Out of my mouth came the word A and they heard elephant, you know, it's just like, what am I would be like perplexed at how it all went wrong, you know?
All right. So Brett, for you, coming back to this question around, could you actually, is there some way you could use stack ranking for performance evaluation, or would you just not use it at all? What do you think?
I mean, yeah, I mean, I guess I kind of feel like you stack rank people, you stack rank everybody based on how much they make. So I definitely see where it's applicable. And I think, again, to prepare for like worst case scenario, right?
Yeah.
Tomorrow we have to lay up everybody, you know, we have 20% tomorrow. We need to be prepared for that. Can you please stack rank your, you know, people and be prepared for that?
Yeah, so this part's interesting, right? Because inherent in your framing of like salary as a functional stack rank of the company, like layoffs are, as far as I can tell, mostly about cutting money, right? And so, yes, you can like factor in like the cost of a fully loaded employee, but like if you're cutting 20%, are you cutting 20% from your most junior people? Probably not. Like, I would hope that you're cutting strategically. So how useful actually is stack ranking unless you're actually coming up with like some weird proprietary ratio of like someone's productivity slash value relative to their cost to the company, which is not a metric I've ever seen. I've just seen like, is someone good within their band? And then also like, how much money do they make?
I mean, this is part of the reason I say that it depends on like the organization. I'll take an extreme example. I seem to use a lot of those today, but like a trading desk on Wall Street, every single person on that desk has a P&L. You know exactly how much money every single person on that desk made for the company every day of the year. It's very easy to say you are the worst performer. You go when we have to lay people off, right? So in that scenario, it's very easy to stack rank people. You know, in financial research, we're writing reports. We have recommendations. You can track the hit rate. You can track how many people engaged with you based on the reports that you wrote. You can track lots of different things. And these all went into our metrics that we used in my prior life. And so I'm not going to say it was a perfect calculation, but I think it did a pretty good job of encapsulating the role as a whole. And so in my world of financial services, it does seem to work relatively well, but I can totally see other worlds where how do you stack rank artists like in video games? Like your character wasn't as good as their character design. You get fired. Like that just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah. Well, the other nuance here is just the application of...
Just because it's hard doesn't mean you shouldn't try it, you know? And I think that's a lot of people say that, right? Well, it's really hard to do this. It's like, well, I mean, yeah. Still got to do it, you know, like you got to rank people based on the value that they create for the company. I know, Drew, that seems weird, but like that is what, you know, that is how I think. And I think, again, ideally, you create it with a strategic framework in mind. You're going to make cuts that are going to lower the cost in a strategic way that's going to have the least amount of impact on revenue and the most impact on your costs. I mean, that's basically, you know, how you should strategically think in an optimal world, and you should debate that with a group of people and da, 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 da. And that's how I would do it. And just go, hey, cut the bottom 5% is an extremely oversimplified and a very inaccurate way of going about a like cost reduction process. But again, if you had like one day to decide and you ask your managers and they had no stack ranking and they had not prepared for it and they had, you know, nothing, then you're just going off of, you know, a very short amount of time of information, a lot of biases and things like that. So I think like I can see like the worst case scenario, like preparation, but that's really extreme, right? A lot of businesses act like that or think like that, but in finance, they do, right? Because the finance market could crash tomorrow and they would have to make decisions that day or the next day in response, right? We sort of live in a world where those revenue numbers stay a little bit steadier than what Matthew probably knows.
Well, but Matthew, I think in your case, it was great because it's very easy to see one's performance versus another. Like one of the things that's happening today when I mentioned like the phenomenon of manager stacking is that in today's world for some of these companies, a lot of managers may not even know what their direct reports do. For example, the PM in charge of developers or the manager, engineering manager who hasn't coded in many years, who like, do they really know who the best engineer is? Or like in some cases, like it's a product manager and there are some product managers who are incredibly great at bullshitting, but not doing any work. And then, you know, they could get stack ranked because there's the best bullshitter versus the best actual contributor to the business. And so there are just, you know, and again, my personal view is I do think that there might be, I haven't used it before, there might be some application of stack ranking that makes sense. I haven't found a good one for performance evaluation, but I will concede that like to argue against stack ranking for performance. So I theoretically think there's some ways it can work, But I think one of the other things to keep in mind is the practical application of stack ranking, in which in the world that we live in today, and at many companies, the manager may actually not be the best person to stack rank their team, just because they become, you know, manager of the manager of the manager, and they stop doing the work and things like that.
And the biases of the actual things that go into the metrics that you decide to track for your stack ranking too. I mean, that's also a big factor. And so, you know, there's tons of biases, whether it's not actually having visibility, it's what goes into the metrics, it's do they have personal relationships that you don't know about that affect, you know, how they rank things. So all of these are factors that go into it that dilute their value. And so, you know, the onus is really on management teams to know how far they can push and take these things. But at the end of the day, if you have to cut 10% tomorrow, you need a system to do it. It sucks for a lot of people, but it's either you do based on this, or you have projects that you can say, all right, these three projects are just shut down tomorrow, and that's it.
Yeah. Okay. That would be the counter, I guess, right? Yeah. Strategic, you know, a project
based. I mean, that's easier. And you've seen a lot of companies like Google did that, Alphabet, excuse me, right? Like all those incubated little projects inside of their ATAP org. I mean, part of the layoffs they did was basically, this was in the press, it was like, literally, if you're not profitable by the end of the year, you're done and we're shutting it down.
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes a lot more sense to me as a, again, associating stack ranking with the layoff system. Drew, I think 99% of the time that would be a better way to go about it, right? In the case where you have like 24 hours to decide, you know, like the other way would be. But yeah, and if you think about it again, just to take it to extreme, when you lay people off, you're really stack ranking them, binary stack ranking, right? A one and a zero. I mean, you're, regardless of titles, you're basically saying you are valuable to the company and you're not valuable to the company, which is a bunch of people tied for first and a bunch of people tied for second, you know?
Yeah.
Because like, it's just it's the process of ranking people based on the value they're creating for the company. And at some threshold, they're not making, whether it's based on performance or not, right? I mean, it could be, you're just basically saying like you chose the wrong group to join.
Right. I mean, right? This is like a heuristic that I tell a bunch of people all the time when they're like, how do I like basically optimize my navigation within this corporate world? And I'm just like, all right, step one, think about how your company like makes money. Step two, think about how value is created within your company. Step three, how many logical leaps does it take from that value creation proposition to the actual work that you do every day? The more logical leaps, the less safe you are. That's it. That's the entire strategy.
Yeah, that's a very, I thought about that exact point when I joined Zynga, you know, or my profession. Exactly. Yeah, because you're safer in the organization. Right. If there's a layoff, you're going to be directly
if you make the stuff that your company sells, then like you're pretty important, you're right?
More value. Yeah, exactly.
I'll give a great example. I'll say that's like our business, familiar to anyone in gaming, but I worked at Bloomberg. Research is a cost center. We don't make money unless we help sell terminals. We damn sure tracked how many terminal sales we were helping sell every year. And how many we were keeping from being canceled.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, that's the only thing that matters. If they had to come and say, you guys aren't helping us sell, we're just going to shut it down, we're out of jobs the next day. And the same thing is true across Wall Street. And so, you know, in my world, you know, it's exactly that. Know your place, know how you create value, and damn sure you track it.
Okay. So guys, we're running a little late on time, but I thought we could end with my crazy idea. Okay. So like, I was trying to think, As I thought I was going to be the only person who would try to defend stack ranking here, but like I was trying to think of, is there any way in which I would use stack ranking in a performance evaluation context? And what I thought about was like a variation of stack ranking, and it's different in two ways. The first way is that it wouldn't be based upon a manager to direct reports. It would be all peer and manager based. And secondly, it would be about investing in people. So like, imagine if you are a startup, like every person becomes an investor in on a team. It's like, okay, you have $1 million virtual dollars and I will give you this money and you invest $1 million in your teammates. So every person goes down the line and invests money in the different teammates. Then it's like, okay, now I get a sense of who, not just the manager, but direct reports, how they believe, how they feel about other people on the team. And I also thought that one advantage of that kind of exercise is that sometimes there are very specific metrics upon which we evaluate certain disciplines, right? And so it might be like, you know, for a developer, it might be coding knowledge or the amount of, you know, GitHub code checked in, or it might be different things, but there may be intangibles which don't get tracked, but might get tracked if somebody's like, you know what, if Susan weren't on this team, then basically there'd be all these fights and, you know, she's the glue that holds these people together and makes this job livable, right? And so it's like, even though she kind of like maybe isn't great in these track metrics, she's got advantages somewhere else. And that's why, so like, why are people investing in her, right? Maybe we shouldn't let her go or whatever, right? So I don't know, like, I haven't tried this methodology yet, but I was thinking about it and I was thinking maybe I could even try it. But before I implement it, do you guys see any like big gotchas or reasons why I shouldn't do this?
I mean, besides the fact that it just like heavily skews your entire organization towards like incentivizing people who are buddy buddy with other people, no problems.
That's just a good point. Okay.
Where like your team wants to keep the team mascot because they love them very much and like does not want to let them go because like, you know, they're the one that makes everyone laugh, but like they don't actually do any like high value work. Like
that's possible.
That person absolutely outperforms in peer evaluations over manager evaluations. And it is the most subjective thing on earth. It's up to you as the leader to figure out whether that subjectivity is like a good thing or a bad thing. I think that like in the video game industry, it's probably like a approximate cause of a lot of like bad things that we tweak hiring and performance evaluation processes to root out, right? Like if social groups are like heavily like gender biased or racially biased, then like you end up with some really ugly stuff in there, right? There's like no end of the categories of subjectivity that can get injected there. I think it is up to you to figure out whether or not like, yeah. To sort of appropriate the metaphor, sure, from a Matt Levine newsletter, like whether you want to turn the discrimination dial toward like more discrimination or less discrimination, because that's what you're doing.
It could almost be a contraindicator to a degree from that perspective. If you just see like the same insular groups of people giving each other all of their money in this example, like that's a contraindicator. That's a group you need to be worried about.
One of the reasons why I like the idea is it also, you don't just get information from who got invested in, but like how did who invested how much into who and why would they have done that? Right. I don't know. Brett, any thoughts?
Dude, terrible idea.
Okay,
well, I will say,
Drew, I'm not going to repeat what Drew said. The bias level,
at the end of it, you publish the results. That's when it gets into like, ooh, like death game level, yeah, social experiment.
And not just like how the totals, but like all the details, like to whom.
Yeah.
I would probably,
then it's like Squid Games.
I would
or Hunger Games.
I would make it anonymous to the employees, but you know, visible to managers is probably how I would do it. Again, this is just a crazy idea for the sole purpose of trying to figure out a way of some form of stack rank for performance evaluation. Yeah. But the other final point I just have to say is,
well, I mean, it's sort of, I guess what I would do, I mean, you're sort of getting at the, which I kind of get what you're getting at, which is like the dev costing for Scrum, right? Where you do the Fibonacci scale, mm-hmm, on how many days it's going to cost. And you guys know this, right? Sure. Like you ask a room of developers and you get some type of, you know, average. The thing is though, again, I think that employees don't understand the objectivity and why certain decisions are getting made from leadership. Like that's why you have leaders, right? Because they are thinking about the whole picture. They're thinking about, you know, what that employee, how that employee interacts with that and how that group interacts with that and how that, you know, goes to the bottom line. If you're outsourcing that to the people who are like in the trenches, like it's just a weird, you know, that's not what they're thinking about. So they're just going to make these decisions based on other stuff. But, you know, that said, I mean, I can see where you would get input from it, right? Like if you're not basing your decision on it, I can see what you're saying, which is like, yeah, it's going to give me some data points. And I don't think, you know, data points necessarily bad, right?
Right. Well, maybe the final point I can make and a question to you guys is that I feel that in my entire career, and I've worked at a bunch of different companies, I don't think there has been a good performance evaluation system at any company I've ever worked with in my entire career. I mean, there's been just like, okay, here's, you know, but everything is so, you know, to your point, Drew, like potentially gamed, potentially like just filled with biases. And it's just kind of like every system I've ever used has just been, okay, well, this is good enough, or this is something, and it's better than not having anything. So that's why we're going to do it. But have you guys come across, you know, some magical system at some company that you've been part of, where you feel like performance evaluation is done pretty well?
Go ahead, man. I'll go back to my opening comment. Just like if there was a one size fits all approach, we wouldn't be sitting here. But I thought Bloomberg did a pretty good job. I think, again, what I valued both as an employee and a manager is that there was relatively good visibility as to what was going into it. Mm-hmm. And so you kind of had the ability to know what you were getting into and to have rational expectations about what was coming out of it. It helps that a lot of things are quantitative in that organization and things can be tracked, right? But these are all the things that you know going into that. And it's kind of that social contract of the workplace that you all kind of understand and buy into. So I think from that perspective, it worked as well as you could hope it would work. But obviously, there's plenty of biases strewn throughout it.
Drew or Brett?
Brett, go ahead.
I enjoyed the process at Zynga. I thought it was
That's just because you got a good bonus there.
I got great bonuses. Yes, that helps as well. I can remember. Yeah, that's true. I was on the higher end of the stack ranking. So, you know, that's, so be it. But I thought it was transparent. Okay. And
can you quickly describe how it worked for our audience? Just
well, it was quarterly, and they gave you like a questionnaire you had to fill out. And the first question was, "How did you create value, basically, for the company? How did you kill? How did you kill it?" was the exact wording. But you know, to Drew's point, the first thing I talked about was how much value I created. I was like, I released this feature, made this much. I released this feature, made this much. You know, but and then there was a couple other things, and then they did a performance review, and it was short. You know, it was just bullets, and it had a different buckets of characteristics that they wanted people to embody, and one of them was to be collaborative and teamworking. So that count, you know, that's how they got around you just being cutthroat. I mean, if you were just cutthroat, you were not going to be stacked right at the top for sure. So and then, but it was nice because it was quarterly, and then they gave you bonuses based off of that. So you kind of knew how you were doing, but I liked the speed of it because it was like, hey, you got 3 months. We're going to review it. 3 months to review it. I mean, I like our system. We're more of a flat organization, and we're binary. You're either a hell yeah or a no. And if you're a no, you're not here. It didn't work out. And we don't really, and then I guess we kind of follow the sort of Valve philosophy a little bit, which is like, if you're a hell yeah, you're already sort of someone who tries to improve themselves. Like you don't really need to have someone going, hey, you know, Brett, we really think you need to work on these things. Like, you know, you're doing your job.
Valve actually does stack rank, right? That's right.
No, I don't know if they stack rank, but I think what they do is they sort of assume if you're a high performer, you're already basically reviewing yourself. Like you don't need an external source to review you. If you're a hard, like high performers want to do better. They want to improve themselves. They're personally incentivized to get better. And I guess my stance is a little bit differently. I do think that, but I generally just feel like people come in as who they are.
Yeah.
And I don't really believe that organizations or managers or people within organizations overall, you know, on the majority can actually change or be changed. So we don't really spend a lot of time on it. You come in, you're either a hell yeah or no. If you're hell yeah, great, we keep you. And you basically, after about 6 months, get tenured in our organization. Like you're basically never going to get like let go or fired if we don't have to. And or you're a no. And then if you're a no, you just, you know, we let you know and it didn't work out.
And then when you're here, we know you're already competent and we have a place for you, you know? Okay. So.
Drew?
Yeah, I mean, I was not at Zynga for the quarterly reviews era. And honestly, I'm kind of glad because I cannot imagine doing like four quarterly self-evals and like evaluating my team every year. That seems like a lot. But I mean, again, returning to the very first thing that I said, I think that Zynga and Riot, in my experience, both have like fairly robust job architectures that lay out like, here are all the skills we want you to have. Here's what proficiency looks like within them. And like, here's how we're using this to like calibrate whether or not you're like at a given level of like job title for the discipline that you're in. And like, if you want to know how to move up, like, here's this Excel sheet. It lists a bunch of different ways that you can display all of these characteristics. Let's talk about it. Like, let's agree on the reality of like how you're doing and like where you need to improve and what showing improvement would look like over the course of like the work that you're doing. Now, like, all right, we've agreed on that. We've agreed that like the projects you're working on have these opportunities available to you to like show that you're better at this or like have the ability to learn in this space. Now go do it. And we'll like see you back here in like 3 or 6 or 12 months and like talk about whether or not you did it, right? Like that is, I think, what people want is a sense of agency that like they can learn and grow and improve and then be rewarded for their inputs, for their results.
Right. Yeah. And Drew, I had heard, so like at my company, I have a notion of something called a skills development matrix, meaning like for any specific discipline, there's different areas and what the expectations are for each area. And then somebody from Zynga had mentioned that Zynga has something almost exactly like it, but just more complicated. But yeah. Is that basically how that works?
Yeah, it's that, but like the x-axis is like all of the different sort of title bands, right? So if you think about like,
leadership, right? I actually like, do it the same way. Like, yeah, like associate leadership skills. Right. Like associate PM, PM, senior PM, lead PM, whatever. And then all that's exactly. Against like, you know, domain expertise, quantitative analysis, you know, all the different. Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah, you want a mid-level PM to know SQL. You want your director of product to be able to like think really analytically and like all of these ways and use framework thinking to like come up with new ideas that the rest of the company couldn't come up with, right? Like, and also you expect your DOP to have like over the course of their career at the company, like shown that they have everything.
Okay. So for you, whether it's at Riot or Zynga, there's like some kind of framework like that, which says for your role, you should have these kind of skills. And then is there any notion of, so there isn't a notion of like quarterly, you know, I want to do this quarter. Did I achieve
it? We have plans, right? But like, that's about anchoring them in like, what are the competencies that you want to improve? What are the things that you want to develop? Like, what are the opportunities that exist? And like, what are you going to do in the next 90 days that are going to like move your goals forward and move your career forward in a way that you and I agree on?
Okay, cool. All right, guys.
I could go on and on about that, but I think just where that falls down is like what happened at Zynga is like, it's sort of like employee run, right? Like everyone was leveling up and there wasn't support for it, right? Yeah. Like, you know, if you guide, like, that's kind of why we don't do it is like, I don't need 20 leads.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, no, I'm not going to spend all my time making all of my analyst leads because I just don't need 20 leads. You know, they all be, I'm ready, you know, be like, well, I can't pay you and I don't have any work for you.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what happened at Zynga a little bit. It's like people leveled up real quickly. And like, there was a lot of,
it's incredible at training up people. And also, it's how you create the tower of managers.
That's what it created at Zynga. Yeah. Eventually, when I got, you know, when I left, it was like there was 5 layers. When I was first started there, it was 2, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, so because you got to fill those roles, you got to pay them more and all this stuff. And it becomes this like
rat
race. Whereas the company run is like, hey, we just need a lead. Like, you know.
So one way you could address that, Brett, or at least the way that we've done it at my company is like, you not only need to have the skills to get to a certain level, but there also has to be an opportunity. But if you get to the skills, we'll at least pay you more. Oh, are you there, Brett?
Which is like, I'm
here. Okay. Yeah, I got both of you.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm here. Again, that seems counter to what I think is good for the business because it's like, well, we'll just pay you more. It's just going to cost you more for a skill that we don't need.
Okay.
So do you anticipate that like over time, some of your best people are just going to like leave and go somewhere else where they have more opportunities for career advancement and like increasing their compensation, because it's like what your value prop for your analyst, right? To use your own example, is like, I don't know, like keep doing the good work and like we'll basically keep you where you are, because we as a company don't realize the value from you leveling up in these ways. So we're not going to level you up. But at some point, right, your best people are going to be like F this, like I want to go somewhere where I can have a decent shot at 2x-ing my salary in the next 3 years.
Yeah. I mean, people don't run my company. I do, yeah. You know, then go, you know, yeah. If we don't need you, why would I pay you more? I mean, a good expensive person that the company doesn't need is just a good expensive person.
Sure. That's right.
You know, I mean, generally what happens is we do have spots for them and we have a lot of opportunities for growth and you know, we generally fill them, but if we don't, you know,
right.
We're like, hey, we're not going to just pay you more money because you got better at something, you know?
One more extreme example to end it. And I promise this is my last extreme example, but public accounting companies are a great extreme example. Their cost model, they need to be really fat at entry-level positions and basically have a pyramid with fewer and fewer people at higher levels, which is the same as what you guys are talking about. But the attrition rates that they have are massive because they grind people to the ground at the lower levels. And most of them just naturally leave because they don't like that lifestyle. But in bad economies, they sometimes actually just get stuck with too many people at those lower levels who are trying to move up. And it's like, you're going to be stuck as an analyst, whatever junior level, or you can leave, have at it. Like their cost model only works with that pyramid structure. And, you know, that's like an extreme, again, it's an extreme example, but it's kind of similar to what you were describing.
Yeah, it also exists in management consulting. So at McKinsey, they have a policy called up or out. So you either, you know, are on the partner track and you're increasing in levels, or they just expect you to leave. So, all right. Any final messages from anyone? Otherwise, I think this has been a pretty interesting call. I don't know. Any final thoughts? All right.
I just
go ahead.
I just ask that you delete this in 2 years.
What happens in 2 years, Brett?
The morality of humans change.
Oh yeah, no, I feel like we'll all get canceled 10 years from now for like
that's what I'm saying.
Stack ranking as like a good or bad thing depending on like how the world turns.
Yes.
I was going to say this. Don't cut this out of context. Don't clip us. We're all trying to give our best opinions with all of the caveats. We understand that there's no one size fits all approach. We all try to do the best job we can.
Yeah, we're just trying to.
I hold only these views to be true until the end of 2023.
Like a research report, we'll just stick like 80 pages of this.
No views that I've shared at this call. Well, I continue to share after this year. I've changed my mind to whatever the collective consciousness believes at the moment.
That's strange. I've never changed my mind about anything, and I've never been wrong. So we're good. You can clip this one in 2025, you know.
Sounds good.
It's fine. Okay.
All right, guys. Well, with that, thank you very much, gentlemen, for another interesting discussion. Hopefully more to come in the future. And for everyone else, we'll catch you next time. Bye, everybody.